Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. This one's a little different. If you hear any background noise, that's Clint Casper moving around there. He's riding with me on these ads. What's up, Clint?
What up?
The podcast is presented by HHA Sports. We talk about them all the time. Single Pen Nation. We just got to get Clint converted over to that game. Use code WCB15 at HHASports.com. I think that code's right. Also, Scent Crusher. Talk about our Scent Crusher stuff all the time. Love our scent eliminating products. Also, check out, go to the Scent Crusher Facebook page and go see the live interview that Dan was awesome enough to have me in for a live interview on their page. So go check that out. Also, North American Whitetail Championship. You could kill a buck, win your region, and win 50 grand just for doing something you would have done anyway, which is pretty awesome. Podcast is also brought to you by Elite Archery. That's something else Clint doesn't use, but he should because he's wrong. Elite just dropped their new line of bows. In our opinion, we think it's going to be a game changer for the average person at home, especially ease of use. You don't need a bow press to tune the thing. And for target archers, a lot of stuff they want to make an adjustment on a shooting line, and they can do it right there. Something Clint Casper does finally support us on is Lone Wolf Custom Gear. And if you're not familiar with Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Andre DeQuisto and Cody DeQuisto just brought you this kick-ass line of the ultimate in hunting tree stands, the DeQuisto Series 1.0. Clint's familiar with that setup.
Yes, I want to just add real quick, it is an invaluable tool that needs to be looked at as a tool. It is not just a tree stand, not just a set of sticks. Keep this in mind. It is a tool. I just want everyone to, I want that to be heard throughout this podcast and whatnot. It is a tool. It is not just a tree stand and not just an old-fashioned set of sticks. And once you get your hands on them, you'll see what I'm talking about. It is a game-changing tool. Mark that down. I'm saying it. Everyone's saying it that uses them. Once you touch them and actually use them, you'll see what I mean. But remember this. It is a tool, not just another tree stand.
Hey, what did you compare it to? Was it like you could – oh, the last podcast. You could dig a trench using a spade.
I said, oh yeah. I said you could use a. I said you can dig a trench. You can use a spade shovel, or I said you can use a freaking backhoe and get it done in, you know, a eighth of the freaking time, and not have to work your dick off while you're doing it. And it's way more efficient. And at the end of the day, you can sit back and be like, wow, you know, man, old times have changed. New times are in. I mean, like I said, it is a tool. That everybody needs to look at, and once you get your hands on, you'll understand what I'm saying. But it's not just your old-fashioned tree stand that you throw up in an oak with some set sticks and you leave it there. I mean, this is a game changer, and it's a tool that everybody that's going to seriously hunt whitetails needs to have in their arsenal.
For sure. We'll talk more about I imagine we're going to get into mobile hunting a little bit in this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're interested, lonewolfcustomgear.com. Use code WCB for everything on their store. And also check out the DeQuisto Series podcast found here or their YouTube channel. Podcast also brought to you by Big Time and Hunter's Blend Coffee. Clint, I'm going to play the intro music really fast. Here it goes. All right, as you know, Clint Casper is here for a podcast. It feels like it's been a little bit. I don't know how long it's actually been. I've like lost track of time. But what's going on, dude?
Not much, my man. Yeah, it's August, right? I think we did one in August. I think it was like right before I left for Colorado and got everything kicked off, I believe, because Yeah, we were talking about that and early season whitetails, and that's, I mean, it sounds like it wasn't that long ago, and I guess it wasn't in a way, but then when you think about it, you're like, oh man, it's like about to be November here in another day, so.
Right,
I guess it
I
was a couple months, I mean, it was a little bit ago.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, we need to do them often, but I think sometimes people don't understand, like, how busy our schedules are. Like, this is late. Like, this is way past my bedtime. We're recording this. This is why we're doing it one-on-one. We wanted to get it done, but our schedules aren't working. We're making this happen, and which is fine. We've done one-on-one podcasts before, and we're capable. They're not as crazy because Steve and Eric and Doug aren't here, but we might get more to the point of conversation, or we might not. We might go way the hell the other direction. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, it's always a lot harder to mix schedules together whenever, you know, you got kids involved and jobs, and we're right in the middle of hunting season, and I mean, we're taking crops off, and I mean, you know, it's just, you just bought another, you know, speaking of, you know, the new crib you and Sam just got, congrats on that.
Thanks
for you guys. Super excited about that for you. But yeah, I mean, just 8 million things going on. I mean, I've already been in like 4 or 5 states this fall, and you've been in a couple states, and it's just, yeah, just a lot going on. So it's not as easy as it sounds to jump on and get this done.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds a lot easier than what it really is whenever you're blending everyone's schedules together. But, man, we're making it happen. It's like 10:15 here in Ohio. It's what, 9:15 there?
Past my bedtime.
I'm with you, dude.
There's people laughing like 9:15. I'm like, dang, dude, I get up at 4 a.m.
Yep. No, I'm with you, man. I'm totally with you. Like, I tell everybody all the time, I'm like, hey, you hit 30 years old and over, like 9 o'clock rolls around, I'm like, yep, time for bed.
No shit. Especially, man, it's like, I'm thankful for like all the hustle, but like the day job, the podcast work, a bunch of other stuff. Then, you know, throw hunting in the mix too. You got to try and do that. And then it's just, it's all good things. You know, it's good things to be busy with that stuff. But, you know, come, hopefully December, January, when I'm hopefully tagged out by then, I'll be able to relax. So,
yep. No, I'm with you. Absolutely. I mean, it's fun to be busy, but it sure does take its toll. And after a while, it's like you start looking more and more forward to that. Like, oh, yep, 9 o'clock. I can go to bed now. It's cool.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. So, dude, so you went to, what was the first state you went to?
So I kicked off this year in Colorado chasing, the almighty great mule deer hunt that everyone probably has gotten tired of hearing me talk about and was probably ready for me just to freaking get one fucking killed so they could be like, thank God this dude got it done so we can hear about it and move forward. But no, man, I kicked it off in Colorado, solo on public. It was,
okay. So solo, go back to that a little bit because.
Yep.
I feel a hunt like that for the average Midwestern dude that I would say if you're a Midwestern guy or gal and you're thinking about going out west and you make a commitment to go, you're already above average there.
Because
a lot of people always talk about it and never do it. And that's a sad, sad reality for a lot of people. They want to do it, but they don't take the initiative to force themselves to go. But once you go, you realize how attainable some of it can be. But to do it solo, to me, is one of those things that takes more years of experience of taking the dive out to the great Western states that every Midwestern hunter dreams about. So I want to make sure why you tell your story that people remember you're by yourself. You don't have anyone to like have camaraderie with through the suck of climbing a mountain or being in whatever you're in.
No, absolutely. It was 1,606 miles on the dot from my house to the trailhead where I was going to park to get this all started off.
Did you drive?
Oh, yeah. 26 hours and 42 minutes one way. Yep.
Damn.
I wanted to have my own rig. I've done enough of these solo deals to the point of where if you can drive and have your own rig, it's almost a comfort thing in a way. Like it's just
like
nice
home.
Like it's the only part of my normal life that I'm taking with me, like, when I go out to Idaho, Colorado, Utah. I mean, like, I've done solo deals where I fly in, a buddy picks me up, he drops me off. Okay, see you in 8 or 9 days, pick you back up, take you to the airport, which, I mean, that's cool because I can be in Colorado in a couple hours. But
right.
It's nice to have, like, your own rig because there's just so many things you can't control. Like, you might, you know, you might have to go to your plan, like, C, D, E because A, B, and C have just totally gone to shit, and now you need to go to the other side of the unit, and you basically need to drive to the other side to, you know, I mean, or maybe, you know, maybe you're just not finding game, or maybe, you know, snow blows in, roads are closed. I mean, you know, there's so many things that can happen where it's just nice to have your own rig. So my whole philosophy was, this was a 4-year quest in Colorado. This is going to be my fourth trip.
Fourth year going yep. for a mule deer? Just
yep,
a mule deer?
This was the fourth year. And for me, because I've been fortunate enough to kill so many whitetails and been blessed to kill so many good whitetails, the mule deer thing for me was, it wasn't just a mule deer. I wanted to dive in and start right in, basically getting my ass kicked hunting mature, big mule deer. You know, it wasn't, for me, it wasn't just, I want to go out and shoot the first mule deer buck I see. It was, I want to go out and I want to hunt, like, either the biggest buck on the mountain or one of the biggest bucks on the mountain. And that's, like, my new obsession. And it's been up to this point, it's been 3 years. So this is my fourth year. I had not released an arrow yet. I mean, I had been at full draw 4 times in the previous 3 trips on probably, you know, I'll say 170 plus bucks. One of them would have probably pushed the magical 200 inch mark or damn close. So, you know, I was right there knocking on the door, but just everything had constantly not worked for me and worked against me when it came down to, like, the last few seconds, you know, whether it was
right.
bucks walking off, not coming in a lane that I had, just the unthinkable happening where you're like, okay, he's 40 yards. There's no way he's going to get out of here without me killing him. And somehow, some way it would happen. So, you know, I mean, you know, so for me, it was like,
oh, dude, that's crazy.
Such a quest.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy to think, because when a Midwestern hunter plans on a hunt out west, you don't necessarily imagine coming home empty handed after all, like, the big dreams and just anticipation of, like, oh, I'm going to see so many animals. But when you come back, you don't think about coming home empty handed and going, fuck, I got to plan a trip for next year to go back. A lot of people might just skip that and go back another year, which I kind of did with my elk hunt, like, but I didn't necessarily expect to come home with an animal. I knew, like, probability is you're not going to come home with anything. Like, that's just the reality of bow hunting.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I do want to go back, and I will. I just had the opportunity to hunt different stuff this year, but I definitely want to go back. You know, it's on my Western bucket list.
Yep. Oh, and it's so, like, for me, the different style that, like, the Western hunting brings, like, to the bow hunting scheme of things. I mean, and me and you have talked about this. I mean, you're going from playing cat and mouse in stands and blinds and stuff, hunting whitetails, to glassing and spotting and stalking. It's just a totally different game. And it's just, it totally, from antelope to elk to mule deer to, you know, mountain lion. I mean, you name it. I've done it in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's like, for me, that style of hunting, like, the art that goes into solo hunts and the mental part, like, the mental game, it's just captivated me on every level. I mean, it's just, it's, I don't know. I just almost feel like I was born to hunt like that. So it's been, like, this, like, crazy obsession, I guess you could say, that I've had here of recent. And the mule deer game, I mean, it was so much more, than just a mule deer. I mean, just surviving 8, 9, 10, 11 days in the backcountry in Colorado, if you can just mentally stay out there for 5, 6, 7 days, honestly, you've accomplished something that not trying to sound like a dick, but 99% of most dudes will never even attempt to do.
Yeah.
Because it's just that hard. I mean, it's mentally draining to not have someone to lean on or to not have someone to bounce ideas on. Or, I mean, shit, there's some spots and some units I would go 5 or 6 days before I bought a Garmin inReach mini this year. I would be in spots where I might not communicate with the world for 4 or 5 days till I got service again.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's wild for a lot of people to think about. That is crazy for anyone nowadays because you have service almost everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the second year I went, I was there 9 days in that unit. And out of the 9 days, I only communicated or had service 2 times in those 9 days. To like, I called out once and I had service 1 day, enough to like text back home a little bit. But I mean, realistically, like, it was me and the mountain. I mean, that was it.
But why do you choose to do that though? Like, why with this mule deer hunt? Why are we like, I'm going by myself? Like, why did you set up for that? That type of hunt, because you have a ton of people that would have gone with you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I honestly like the challenge that the solo hunts bring. Mainly because it's people look at it as it's you versus the animal or it's you versus the mountain. But honestly, it's you versus you. Like, you're either your biggest hero or you're your worst enemy, and it's like a huge mental game with yourself. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to mentally keep yourself in the game and not let yourself get homesick? Are you going to mentally make the right decisions to keep yourself alive out there every day? Are you going to mentally make the right decisions to get a buck killed? You know, are you going to know where to camp or not to camp? I mean, it's an adventure at every turn for me, and it's more of people get like, I get asked this all the time, you know, don't you feel pressure from like companies you work for, or don't you feel pressure because people listen to you on the podcast and they expect you to kill? And honestly, like, there's nobody or no company, no one out there that will ever put more pressure on me than I put on myself. I mean, I just like I play that game with myself constantly. I mean, I am my biggest critic.
Well, because of that reason is why companies work with you, though. You know, they wouldn't work.
I mean, it's a good trait, I guess you could say, that I have in myself. But it's also like, I push myself to the extreme limits of what I've ever thought was capable of doing. Whether it's training for hunts, on hunts. You know, if you'd have told me 10 years ago that I could shoot the distances I shoot right now as accurately as I do, I would have said there's no way. But I've just pushed myself to those limits. So these hunts, they're like my title. Like, when I get to go solo, it's like my title fight, my Super Bowl, my World Series, whatever you want to call it.
That's a
great
way to put that, I think.
Yeah, like I'm getting to test, honestly, like, how mentally and physically tough or – you know, some guys want to like judge it off the badass meter. Like, basically, I'm getting to go out there and be like, okay, dude, you want to call yourself a badass? You want to think you're a badass? You're going to go out in Colorado 15 miles in for 9 days, and we're going to see, are you as badass as what you think you are? I mean, and that's basically what it boils down to, is like, mentally and physically, can you live out there long enough and sustain yourself long enough to get a mule deer buck killed, or to get an elk killed, or like I said, even just surviving, even if you go down swinging, which I've done the last 3 years, I've went down swinging. The first arrow I released at a mule deer buck was this year on the buck I killed. you know, so it's like, it's not even about I mean, obviously anytime you go on a hunt, you want to punch your tag and you want to harvest something.
Right.
But like, for me, it's been so much more about just proving to myself, like, okay, you know, this is hard. The success rate's 13% on most of these archery mule deer hunts. I mean, like, it's not good. Like,
right,
the odds are not in your favor.
Well, let's bounce that, though. And sorry if I'm cutting your story short.
No, you're good, man.
With keeping that success rate in the back of your head, and you're going out here by yourself, okay, you've chosen an area you're going to go. Okay,
yep.
You get to the trailhead. Now what?
So once I drew this unit, Immediately it was Onyx, Google Earth, just constantly. I mean, I felt like I had been in the unit before I ever stepped foot on it. And I felt like I knew it like the back of my hand because I had had 5 or 6 game plans already kind of put together. Like, okay, if there's pressure here, I'm going to do this. And honestly, it's funny. As soon as I got there, I get to the trailhead. I start in, I'm like 4 miles in, and I run into a ton of free range sheep. And anybody that hunts out west knows, herds of, you know, cattle, thousands of cattle, thousands of sheep, not good. Where they are is where animals will not be. Yeah. So right off the rip, I'm 4 or 5 miles in. I'm actually hunkered down. Big storm's blowing in. First big storm of the trip. I'm hunkered under this pine and I'm like, okay, I'm going to ride this storm out. Took a little video. I was trying to keep like a daily log of like what was going on, you know, and I'm taking this video and I can hear something while I'm doing the video off my cell phone. And I look behind me and off in the distance, I just see him coming up over this saddle. I mean, just hundreds of head of sheep and sheep dogs. And I'm just like, no, like, I mean, they are pouring. They're pouring down into this freaking basin that I'm wanting to potentially start in. So right off the rip, it was, okay, we got to change on the fly. We got to go to plan B. Like I wasn't even halfway into where I wanted to go and already was having to make adjustment on the fly. But there again, though, that goes back to sustaining yourself and being able to predict and make decisions on the go. And there's nobody to bounce that shit off of. I mean, it's a you versus you world out there. So, you know, that kind of stuff, problem solving is like 90% of these solo trips. I mean, you've got to be able to, in the moment, you know, think, okay, here's what I'm looking at. Here's what I'm seeing. This is not what I was hoping to see. So now we're going to transition from plan A to plan B because plan A, in plain words, just got fucking shot in the asshole with a shotgun. So yes. now we're gonna go to plan B. You know what I mean? And it's like that's where we're at now. So you know, but like for me, that's part of the fun. Like that's you know, that's part of the adventure at every turn is you don't know, you think you know, and you've got these plans, but then you get there and it's like, shit, there's 29 trucks at this trailhead. or there's 3,000 head of sheep, or there's 1,500 head of cattle with 15 dogs with them running around with bells tied to them. Now what? Like, you know what I mean? Like that's real world public land mule deer hunting. I mean, like if you do it long enough, you will run in and see that, especially in Colorado, tons of free range sheep. I mean, ranchers and cattlemen and stuff. I mean, they take use and make good use of being able to run, you know, livestock on those public lands. So you're going to run into that sooner or later.
So did you just, you packed up out of there. It's time for plan B. And like, how far is your plan B from your plan A?
So plan A at that point, I was like 4 miles in and I was wanting to get to like mile 6. Plan B was basically wrapping around the other side of this big basin and diving into this other basin. So I was only going to add like another mile or two. So, and that ended up working out. I think I was almost 8 miles in when I actually got into camp that afternoon and got set up and then was able to glass that evening. And you know, I thought I had a couple days before the sheep might make it back to that area. They had already been there, it looked like, prior. You know, they kind of make just big circles. So I thought, okay, well, I should have a couple days in here without them being in here. Hopefully, you know, obviously I didn't get to talk to any ranchers or anybody and like ask like, hey, when are you gonna get these damn things out of here or anything. So I was just kind of going off my gut of, okay, they're wrapping around this basin. They should probably be in here a few days, be over there a few days. So hopefully they're not over where I'm at for, you know, I was hoping I would get at least a good 4 or 5 days before I ran into them again. But, you know, that was just kind of there again. That was my thought process. I mean, that's not set in stone. That's just what I was, you know, kind of hoping and thinking was going to happen. And it ended up working out. You know, I got up in Glass that night, and the season had opened. Let's see. I got in there on the second. Season opened, I believe, the 29th of August, and I got in there. Easton started school on like the 30th or the 31st. So then by the time I got out there, I actually didn't get out there till like 4 or 5 days into season. So I was kind of behind the eight ball a little bit. I was anticipating him starting school earlier than that, but they moved it back a week. So that was another thing. Like, I wanted to be there for the opener, but I wasn't going to miss his first day of going into preschool. There was just no way I was going to miss it. So I'm like, all right, well, going to have to make a change on the fly. And I, you know, it was like 4 or 5 days into season until I even got there.
So once you get there, now that season's already going and you're this far back, have you seen any other hunters that far in, or is it rare? Or?
Oh yeah, there were trucks and trailers.
I mean, like, once you're miles back in there, like once you're 6, 7, 8 miles back.
Yeah, I mean, I separated myself after about mile five from most people. I mean, a lot of guys, they day hunt a lot, or they just don't want to go in that deep. And I mean, I get that. I mean, you know, it's not for everybody. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you, like, you know, there's a lot of guys that will solo hunt, but they're not going to stray too far from their truck just because of like safety of comfort and just like the comfort zone. I mean, and you know, it takes time to like mentally kind of, I guess, let your guard down and kind of trust in yourself and your instincts to like get back in there 9, 10, 11, 12 miles. Cause here's the deal. Like, reality is reality. You break your leg back there or something bad happens. 10, 12 miles in, I mean, like, it's serious, you know, like that's serious. I mean,
it's a different ball game. It's in the Midwest, you break your leg just about anywhere, someone can get to you.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And you can call somebody.
Yep. Absolutely. And it's a different flavor of the mind game because, you know, like here in Ohio, let's say, God forbid, I fall out of my stand climbing in or whatever. I break my leg. Okay, I can call 100 people that can be there within 25 minutes to get me out and get me help. You break your leg at mile 12.7, 13,000 feet up in the backcountry of Colorado. You are up shit creek without any paddles and you're blindfolded at that point. I mean, it's a totally different, you know, now like I run that Garmin Mini in Reach and I mean, it has the oh shit SOS button. So like, you know, if something really bad happens, you can press that button and you're going to have like, you know, whether it's the Forestry Service or whether it's, you know, the fire and rescue, you're like, you will have someone notified that will be there in a few hours. But here's the deal. If it's really, really bad, you might not have a few hours. I mean,
right.
You know, you fall off a cliff and knock yourself out and can't press the button, and wake up and are half unconscious and your head split open. Like, you don't have 3 or 4 hours to sit there while you're bleeding out waiting. I mean, so like, it's, you know, it is a different type of, like I said, mental game just on the safety side, you know, but, so yeah, usually around that 5 to 6 mile mark is where I kind of seem to drop off most people. I didn't really run into anyone once I got past that 6 to 7 mile mark, and started kind of like getting like back into that backcountry. I did run into a few hikers that were back there kind of making the loop.
Were they eating granola?
They were actually.
Do you guys use the term granola hiker? You and your buddies?
Oh yeah. Yeah. They were, let's see.
Subarus and.
Golden
retrievers and peace sign bumper stickers.
Yeah, I mean, and they were cool. Like, they were cool. Like, they weren't.
They were high. They're lost in the mountains.
Oh,
Colorado.
Dude. Oh yeah, they were. They were. rolling those blunts up, son.
7 miles into the back country, you just by with a bow. They're like, holy shit.
Oh yeah, just getting it. Well, the first thing out of their mouth, you know, they're like, oh, they're like, dude, you know, what are you hunting? And I'm like, mule deer. And you know, right away, they're like, oh, dude, that's rad. You know, like, you know, we haven't seen any back here, but the other day we saw a whole group of them, you know, and I'm like, mule deer? And they're like, oh, yeah. They're like, man, like, their horns are huge and blah. I'm like, you know, are you talking about elk? And they're like, maybe it was elk. I don't know.
Yeah, you're like, oh, cool. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah. Like, they start talking about herds of mule deer, and I'm like, I think you're talking about elk, because right now they're not really, like, herded up. Yeah, yeah, maybe it was elk.
That's funny. Like, all right, man, have a good day.
Oh yeah, true that.
How cool would it be though? Like if and I'm sure most people that are out back there hiking are great people, but what if just some random stoner just put you on to just like a record mule deer and you killed him? Like you'd have to get a hold of that dude and give him some sort of like you'd have to be pen pals with him or something. You know, just imagine how crazy that'd be.
Some dude, you know what's so funny?
I bet you it happens more often than you think, but.
Is I just got back from Utah and I hunted the Wasatch Front, which is like a very widely known Utah unit that's hunted by a shitload of people, but a lot of really good mule deer bucks come on. And long story short, I was out there 8 days, put 121 miles in, got my teeth kicked in for like 6 out of the 8 days, and hunted out there solo. And I ran into this guy who was backcountry fishing in this little lake. And he's never hunted a day in his life. And we got to talking, and he literally, like, the biggest buck of the entire trip, I basically ran into because this guy was, like, high and fishing. And he told me that he ran into this beef cow with horns. And I'm like, so it was an elk? He's like, no, I'm pretty sure it was a mule deer. And I'm like, well, I mean, they're pretty different looking creature. I mean, you know, like, I mean, so I like pull up what an elk looks like, and he's like, yeah, yeah, it's that. And I'm like, are you sure? He's like, well, it was really dark and gray, and its horns were really wide, but they weren't that tall. I'm like, I think you saw a mule deer. And he's like, maybe that's it. But he's like, it was right over there on that mountain. He's like, actually, he's like, I've seen that thing like every day I've been in here. I literally went over there the next day, and I'm thinking, this dude's high as shit. He doesn't even know what kind of animal we're looking at. The exact drainage that he told me this buck was living in, that he kept calling a beef cow with horns. I mean, he literally was like, There's a big rock in the center of this drainage, and you'll see this little patch of pines. He lives in there. Dude, no shit. Like, no shit. The giant rock, little patch of pines, right at first light. I'm glassing through my spotter, and out steps out this fucking beef cow with horns. And I'm like, holy shit. Old boy wasn't lying. Like, here he is.
Dude, that's awesome. Guys out there jamming the Grateful Dead fishing and just happens to see this mule deer every day. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I was getting my teeth kicked in, and literally, like, that was like the only little hope that I had, and then I hunted that buck the rest of the trip, didn't end up, I got within 100 yards of him one night, didn't end up cutting an arrow loose or anything, but yeah, dude, if it wouldn't have been for that guy, chances are I probably never would have found that spot, never would have found that buck, and, could still be wandering around the mountains over there looking for a buck, to be honest with you, because I was bound and determined to at least find one to hunt before I left.
Right, right. That's hilarious. So,
yep.
Going back to this past year's mule deer hunt, so
yep.
You're back in. Like, how do you go about finding the mule deer first? Like, are you just stopping and glassing for a while, or are you just, like, working your way to a certain spot and then glassing? Or, you know what I mean? Like, is it just like a hard hike right to your spot on Onyx that you want to get to or whatever mapping system you use, and then glassing? Or are you kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Are you hunting along the way for the most part?
So basically, like, I've got predetermined spots on where I want to camp, where, you know, water's super important. So a lot of my spots that I have marked, like, for each game plan I've got a spot marked where I want to camp, which is usually in coordination with water. And then from there, every plan I've got and I'll use the term that my good buddy Brian Barney over at Eastman's Elevated uses. Like every spot that I'm in, there's going to be at least one, if not two, master vantage points. And those vantage points are going to be where I do the majority of my glassing from. And they're going to unlock multiple basins, multiple drainages. They're going to give me really good looks at a lot of country from way up. So when I got to this spot, I wanted to get up to one of the master vantage points that evening before dark. So I hurried up, got camp set up, and got up there and found a couple good bucks right off the rip that night. And I didn't have enough time, obviously, to try to make a stalk or anything. I mean, I had my bow with me and all that, but I mean, it was mainly just, I wanted to see if I could locate some bucks. But those spots, those master vantage points, I mean, I try to locate those off of mapping software way in advance because, you know, I mean, and you know this because you've been out, you know, you just got back from Oregon. So, like, you understand how important glass is out west. I mean, you have to be able to see if you want to kill anything out there. So getting way up high on those master vantage points to where you can look at two or three different drainages and two or three different basins, and you can glass and let the glass do the walking for you and figure out, okay, you know, there's mule deer feeding here, so there's mule deer living in here. And then from there, you can kind of tweak your game plan and make your plan of, okay, I'm going to watch these bucks tonight. I'm going to come back here in the morning. Hopefully I can find them again. I'm going to see where they go bed. I'm going to hang out with them till midday, and then I'm going to go put my stocks on when I got those thermals rising and when the wind's in my favor in the afternoon. And that's kind of what my game plan was here. Located some bucks that night, got back to camp, got something to eat, went to bed, and first thing next morning, I'm right back up on that vantage point. That master vantage point was probably a little under a mile away from where I was camped. I personally don't like to camp right on top of where I'm going to be hunting.
Yeah.
I don't like.
It feels like you can, like, go back to home and then go back out hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, with that, and I mean, like, I just don't, you know, when you're back in the backcountry like that, I mean, animals know kind of what's going on and what's supposed to be there and what's not. And I mean, I don't like having my tent and myself, like, right in the mainstream mode of travel for these animals. So I try to get in, you know, little hidden spots, and lightning's such a big deal out there. So I try to get tucked in, you know, on the backside of saddles or backside of ridge lines. Like, it'd be awesome, dude, to camp right up on the ridge line to where you could literally walk out of your tent in the morning, take a piss, and frickin' walk 100 yards to a vantage point and just start. But, dude, like, lightning is so bad up there in the high country. Like, you're nuts. I mean, you're just crazy to frickin' camp anywhere close to those ridge lines. So it's like, I usually try to stay way off that. Lightning's scary, man. Like, people ask me all the time, like, don't you worry about bears? Don't you worry about wolves? Don't you worry about mountain lion? And I'm like, you don't want to know what I worry about? Getting fucking shishkabobbed at 13,000 feet.
No, from
what I worry about is becoming a freaking lightning rod. I mean, that's what I like. Cause there again, I mean, like, you've got a chance to get attacked by a bear and not get killed. You've got a chance to run into wolves and not get eaten. You've got a chance to fight off a mountain lion. You get hit by lightning at 13,542 feet. Guess what? It's over.
You're done.
That's it. You're done. You are now fucking barbecued. If you're not dead, you're an invalid. You are paralyzed. There's nothing left. You're just going to lay there until something eats you. I mean, I'm good on that, man. Like, that is not like,
so Clint's only scared of lightning. That's fair.
Hands down, man. Like, you ask me what I'm worried about out there, it is not an animal. It is Mother Nature and the hand of God of lightning.
I got a question for you. How many times do you think mule deer get hit by lightning?
Man, I mean, there has to be game that gets hit because, I mean, they run those ridge lines so much, and I mean, they love to travel up on those, you know, up and over the saddles, and I mean,
that could be the dumbest question ever asked on a podcast. How many mule deer do you think get hit by lightning?
I mean, but honestly, though, like, if you think about it, like, in the high country, you're above tree line.
I bet you it's more than you think.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Like, so many of those animals live above tree line. So, like, I always camp down below that. So, like, I'm down in the tree line always. I would rather have to climb 1,200 vertical feet every morning the minute my ass wakes up to get up over a saddle to get into where I want to get into. I would rather do that every day than have to sleep at night when big storms roll in, because in Colorado especially, you're going to ride out a storm every single day. You are going to ride lightning and a storm every day, a lot of times every night. It's going to happen because you're so high up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, like, I would bet you there's a lot more mule deer, especially because they love that high country more so than anything, that get hit by lightning than what people really think, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's get to this. So give us the breakdown of, like, when you spot your mule deer, because, you know, I'm envisioning how far back you are, kind of like the grit you had to go through to get there.
Yep.
Kind of break down, like, start us where you found him and then, like, what happens.
Yep. So the first morning, got into that night, glass that night, found some good bucks, was pretty pumped for the next morning. Get into the next morning, I locate right off the rip, big 3x3 and a big 4x5 from the night before. They're probably a mile away. I'm watching them at first light. They're in this giant willow patch. They're in this big, in this big basin. I'm watching them, and they dive into this huge patch of willows, which the freaking mule deer in Colorado love those willows. They live in them. They eat in them. They bed down about 10 o'clock, and they're in a spot that it's just going to be super hard for me to get to get into as far as, like, a stalk goes. And, I mean, out there, it's easy to watch a mule deer bed down and be like, okay, I'm going to – and I used to be guilty of this. Okay, you know, if I loop all the way around 3.5-4 miles, I can drop in on top of them and drop down on them, and I'm going to make a stalk. You know, I'm just going to go for it. I've learned over the years, like, if it's not high percentage and it's not like a play that you're like, oh yeah, I really think my odds are good there.
Yeah.
You're almost better off to either A, wait those bucks out till they move again, or B, go find another buck, because the energy that you expend when you're up at 13,000-14,000 feet and you're climbing and dropping 1,000-2,000 feet all the time, like, that 2 or 3 miles to loop around there, dude, that might take you half a day. So, like, if you're burning and wasting all that energy and time on a half a day on a stock that's like a half-ass wholeheartedly thing, you're better off to conserve your energy and either study those bucks all day and watch what they do and try to figure out a way to kill them the next day, or go try to find another buck. So for me, at that point, I'm like, okay, it's day one, it's morning one, you know, I'm going to go ahead and roll the dice, and I know these bucks are in here, but I'm going to go check a few other drainages and a few other basins, and I'm going to go travel some country, run the ridge line, and see what I can see. So I ended up about 1 o'clock getting into this, this really, really gnarly basin that was pretty much cliffed out all the way around it. And there was like one way in, one way out. And I got set up and started glassing, and I found the buck I ended up killing. He was with 4 other bucks. I found him right away, and they're tucked up against these rocks and just in some just typical Colorado mule deer stuff, just super gnarly, super rugged, just, you know, steep, rocky shit that only mule deer are going to live in. That time of the year, you know, they're all sprawled out. They're freaking bedded up. You know, they're enjoying the sun. It's 1 o'clock. I'm looking at them and I'm just like, man, you know, like, those bucks potentially are in a spot. I mean, it'd be rough to get in, but honestly, they're in a spot that I probably could get to. And so I opted, instead of going right in guns a-blazing, I thought, okay, chances are those bucks are not, haven't been hunted all year just because of the shit they were in. I'm like, no one's back here. I'm going to roll the dice and just watch them today and see, kind of just see what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I stuck with those bucks all day. They ended up getting up right before dark. They moved down into the basin. fed on neon green grass that's growing in the basin. There was a ton of snow still up there. So, I mean, the snow runoff just had that basin super neon green because it was getting water constantly from that snow runoff. So I figured those bucks probably were living there all the time. So I thought, all right, tomorrow I'm going to start off here. Day two, I go up in there, not a deer to be found. I don't know what happened. I don't know where they went. I searched all day, turned up some bucks, turned up some deer, covered like 12 miles, made a giant loop, from camp clear out around this mountain range, probably hit like 5 or 6 different basins. I don't know how many drainages, just couldn't turn these bucks up. Didn't even really run into anything that was significantly what I would have called like a solid shooter buck that day. Mm-hmm. So on day three, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go back and start where I started off morning one. And I'm just going to go back to square one and see if I can find that big 3x3 and the 4x5. And located them again, same spot, right back in the frickin' willows. And I'm just like, shit, I'm like, man, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have to make a go this time and just go over there and see what I can do. So I get over there, takes me about 3 hours, make the big loop. I'm above them. And from where I was glassing, I didn't realize how tall the willows really were over there, but they're like 4.5, 5 foot. So, I mean, when I got over there, I knew right away I was in trouble because I'm like, unless these bucks stand up and I can see their racks, realistically, I'm like, I'm basically hunting ghosts that are bedded in this shit somewhere that I'm never going to see. So I get over there and I'm like, this was basically a waste of my time. Now, it was a waste of my time, but it was also good because I was contemplating on going over there. Now that I've been over there and I can see that this is basically unhuntable, I can kind of X this spot off as far as like, I can quit wasting time here. So like, out there hunting mule deer, I mean, you honestly have to not only like figure out what spots are good, but you got to figure out what spots are like unhuntable or spots that you're just not going to be able to kill a mule deer in. And then that way you're not wasting time. So it was kind of good and kind of bad all in the same deal. So I ended up getting out of there and going back to where I found those bucks in the cliffs, that it would have been like later on day one. So I got back over there. And I'm not turning anything up. And I'm just saying, and I'm like, man, it got really hot that day. It was like in the 70s, which in the high country during that time of year, that was pretty warm, middle of the day. Mm-hmm. And it's like 1 o'clock and I'm just like, the shadows are really hanging off these rock ledges. I just kept thinking like, there's gotta be some bucks tucked in here somewhere. It has to be. So I kept running this big ridge line and I was almost to the end of it. And I don't even know why I did what I did, but I happened to see this big rock ledge out ahead of me. And it actually was like imagine like a huge spine on top of this mountain that's running north and south. And there was like this little micro spine that jotted off and ran like directly east. I went to the end of that. I'm at about 13.5, 13.6. I went to the end of that. I get to the end of it, and I look straight down below me. And, I mean, directly below me, here's this group of 5 bucks from the first day. And the big wide bastard that I end up killing, he's in that group. And I knew as soon as I put my binos on him, I'm like, that's him. Like, I knew it. Immediately before he ever even turned, I just saw how wide he was. I'm like, that's him. So immediately now I'm scanning, looking to see like, okay, like now I got to figure out like how, like, can I get down to him? Cause it is super gnarly. I mean, right off the rip in my head, I'm thinking, okay, the bucks are here. They're in a good spot. It's in the afternoon. I talk about thermals all the time. And up there in the mountains in the morning, when the air is still cool, your thermals usually are dropping down. But as the day heats up, the temperature rises, it usually brings your thermals up and over top of the mountain. So I'm above them, which is perfect. I have the wind and the thermals in my face blowing from them to me. So that's perfect. My problem is I've got to be realistic with myself, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, can you navigate down this without falling to your death 1,500 feet? Like that was the, you know, that was like the real, like that was like the realistic part was, you know, okay, you're up here where only mule deer and mountain goats live. Are you going to be able to, are you going to be able to navigate this shit to get down to them?
Well, yeah. Finding them is part of the challenge. Getting yourself into a situation to get a shot's the bigger challenge now.
Yes. So for me, this is like, this is where it starts to get fun for me because I like my whole year leading up to this hunt, like I've envisioned and I've replayed this scenario in my head, not knowing I'm going to be in that scenario like 82 million times. I mean, I've got a buck in a spot that's killable. I've got conditions. Now I just have to put together a plan to get to him. A, not kill myself. B, not let him know I'm dropping in from above. And then C, figure out a way to get an arrow in him. So it's like I'm at phase A of this whole deal right now. And that's trying to figure out how to get to him without killing myself in the process. So
right.
So about 80 yards to the left of him is kind of what I'm judging. There's this rock crevice that runs straight down, and at the end, it opens up. So basically, like imagine like a V-shaped, we'll call it a V-shaped little valley that starts at the top of this spine and runs down towards these bucks, and then at the very end, it just runs out to where it's wide open. So once you get to the end, you've got to either pop around the outside or pop over the top and shoot down on these bucks. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, if I can Spider-Man my way down to that end, it's going to put me for sure within 100, but I'm guessing within 80 of these bedded bucks. And I'm like, if I can get to that point, I mean, I don't know for sure if they're going to be in range, but it's going to be damn close. But that's the furthest I can get until I run out of real estate. Once I get there, it's wide open. So now, like in my head, I'm trying to justify like, okay, it's going to be straight down like 1,300-1,400 feet vertical. Like, is it worth making this play right now, knowing how steep and rugged this is going to be? Like, you know, now I'm running through my head like, is this a play that's going to for sure put you within, you know, that say 80 yard and in mark? Because I mean, realistically, like that's, you know, the whole time on this trip, mentally I'm thinking if I can get within 80 yards or closer, like a buck's going to die. You're preparing for a long shot
because it's different country than a stand 20 yard shot.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So in my head, I'm thinking if I can get to that spot, I should be good. And, so I drop my pack. You know, I grab, you know, just stuff that I need out of my pack, drop my pack. So I'm going as light as I can. I throw my bow up over my shoulder. And basically I get to this rock crevice, and it's probably about 5 or 6 feet wide, maybe 3 or 4 feet deep. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to like, imagine like you were going to like, you know, like kids jungle gyms, they have those like tunnel slides that you like slide down. Okay. So imagine you're like in that, only it's only like a 3/4 of a circle. It's not like the entire circle. You're going to put your hands up and you're put your feet up, and you're going to basically like Spider-Man down through this. And the reason why I'm going to do that is because if I walk, I'm afraid I will kick rocks. So like, if I kick a rock and it rolls down 30, 40 yards and picks up 6 more rocks, now it's like a little mini rock slide that's going on. These deer for sure are going to know something's dropping in from up top. So in my head, I'm like, okay, you're going to have to like basically Spider-Man your way down this and not kick any rocks. So that was like, you know, the first phase of this whole thing was just seeing if I was going to be able to like physically do that, which honestly didn't work out all that bad. I mean, I was able to take a lot of breaks. The bucks were bedded. It wasn't like, you know, I had time on my side. And honestly, like it was really cool because throughout this whole stock, I actually was smart enough to take my time and actually take it all in. Like, I feel like, you know, we see a buck coming in a tree stand and we immediately just want him to hurry up and get to us and we want to get a shot fired off. You're on an elk hunt, you hear an elk bugle, you just want to hurry up and get over there and get, like, I feel like we don't actually live in the moment and take in truly what's important, which is like everything that leads up to the shot. So I can remember taking little breaks and just like envisioning in my head, like, I'm just like, dude, like, this is it, man. Like, you freaking have worked all year. This is 4 years in the making. Like, enjoy this shit right now. Like, you're in it. You are in a money stock in a great scenario. You have a giant buck at the end of this freaking rock shoot. Like, this is it, dude. Like, you have been waiting for this. Like, soak this shit in the entire time. And so it was like, I'm happy that I mentally made myself like think like that during this stock, because instead of me being so focused on trying to get something killed, like, I honestly probably took a few more breaks than I even should have, but it was cool. Cause I was able to like be in that moment, I guess, longer than I usually normally would be in it. And looking back, it's cool to be like, you know, damn, dude, like, you were in that moment that you had literally replayed in your head 82 million times throughout the year, waiting and training and shooting and, like, you know, praying you were going to be in that moment. And then once I was in it, it's like I took full advantage of being like engulfed in that moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's good though. That's crazy. That's rare, I feel.
Yeah, no, and I mean, like, honestly, like, I try to do that more and more the older I get, because I mean, like, you don't know when your last hunt's your last hunt, or when your last stock's your. I mean, like, you just don't. So it's like I try to suck in as much of that as I can, because it just.
I try to do. I'm the same way. Like, if I can grab my consciousness in like an intense situation like that, like, I do the same thing. But I definitely do that after a successful hunt. Like, just like, honestly, like, while you're telling the story, I was like looking at my buck. I shot my big 10 I shot last year. He's in the new studio. And just like that alone, like, in the moment, like, watching him come in, making a good shot, but then appreciating the trophy, like, consciously.
Yep.
After you kill it, and you just kind of like all the buildup that got you to the point of what you think about all year. I think those moments need to be just absorbed and like slow down. Like, you're in a hurry. Yeah, you got to get them taken care of. You got to get them out of the woods. You got to do that. But that drag out, like, maybe think like, man, I'm holding antler right now. I'm dragging out a buck that I wanted and thought about all year long. Like, maybe don't be in such a hurry on some of that shit, you know? Take your time and really absorb your moment, because kind of like what you compared earlier is, you know, you trained for your championship fight, is you just won the belt when that happened. So absorb that moment and take it in and respect it. And, you know, it's something to think back on, which is, I mean, one of my favorite things about hunting.
Oh, for sure. And like, for me, I mean, it honestly, like, it calms me down when I can be in the moment and like appreciate and respect the moment and not just rush everything. So like it was really cool to like sit there and take a little break and check the wind and make sure everything's good. And I'm peeking up over and I'm looking at these bucks straight down below me, and they're still there. And you know, their freaking heads are laid back. They're all sprawled out. I mean, they're in the shade. They're just freaking hanging out. Like, they have no clue. They have absolutely no clue that, you know, freaking black magic is freaking ducking in from above them. Like, it was just like, it was such a cool experience, like, to be in that moment. And I mean, a ton of people are like, you know, dude, it would have been so cool to have like a camera guy or be with someone. And yeah, it would. But honestly, man, like, I wouldn't trade the solo part for anything, because like, it's just something, there's just something about being by yourself and having to make all the moves yourself and your own decisions and your own game plans. And I don't know, man, it's just I'm just hooked on that part of it. Like, I love to hunt with family and friends and shit, don't get me wrong, but like, and I can't wait for my boys to be able to hunt with me and stuff. But like, There's just something about being there engulfed in the moment, and it's just you. Like, I'm at 13,500 feet. I'm in freaking Colorado. I'm in the most beautiful country there is on planet Earth, in my opinion. And it's just me, man. Like, it is me and five mule deer. So I get like halfway down this, like, we'll get back on the stock and not get into this trippy dippy shit.
Sorry, we do that.
About.
We're good at that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We are like Brian Varney would appreciate that, because he gets on these rants about getting engulfed in the moment.
I got to get him on the podcast, man. That's a dude that is
100%, dude. 100%.
I've talked to him on the phone. Great dude. But we got to get him on the podcast. It's one of those things we talked about for 2 years now.
Yep. 100%, dude. For sure. Straight up freaking killer. Shout out to my dude, Brian. But, so I'm like halfway down this stalk and I peek over and I'm at like 140 yards. So now I'm thinking, okay, I'm hitting my rangefinder at the end and I'm coming up with like 50 yards. So I'm taking 50 off that 130. I'm like, shit, like I'm going to be right at that 80 mark or damn close. So now stuff's really starting to get real. 'Cause in my head, I'm thinking, okay, dude, if you get to this predetermined point at the end of this rock crevice, like, if you can get there and you don't fall or you don't kick any rocks and you can safely get to that point, like, this is it. Like, you're going to be there. So the last part of this, crawl down this crevice, I'm hidden the whole time, but there's one spot where it gets pretty thin and I've got to basically, like, I got two options. I can either try to walk it for like 50 yards, you know, we'll say 30, 40 yards, or I can like scoot, basically put my bow on my stomach and scoot down on like my back and my ass, to stay hidden. And so that was like a huge debate. Like I took a little break and I'm like, man, you know, okay, what do I do? What do I do? And I went back and forth and I'm like, all right, you need to keep doing the Spider-Man deal. And because I wanted to get on like my butt and my back, 'cause I knew I'd stay more concealed, but I was so worried about dropping down too low and dragging basically my ass on a rock and it takes a tumble and rolls down. 'Cause now I'm within 100 yards. So like every little move that's made, any noise, anything, I mean, at this point in time, it would be straight disaster for me. So I finally get down to the end, and that little section took me probably 20 minutes because I had to inch my way down. So I get down to the end and they are directly below me. Like I peek up over and I mean, they are directly below me. So I'm like, okay, if I get up on the side and get on my knees, they're going to be directly below me. Well, I didn't anticipate whenever I made this stock, the actual angle of me shooting straight down. I guess I just wasn't accounting for like, what the angle compensation was going to be, how straight down it was. So I get there and I'm like, oh my God, like they are straight down. Mm-hmm. Now I'm starting to think like when I draw my bow and I come down to get my pin on this buck, like, am I even going to be able to like be on my knees and not have my bottom cam hit?
Yeah.
So that's like the next thing that I'm looking at. And when I got into this moment, you know, I'm at the final phase of the stock. I wrote on my bow, like right on the riser, like right basically above the rest and like right around where you would like mount your bracket in for where your sight would be. I wrote straight down the riser. I wrote the word execute. And, you know, I talk about anyone that follows me or reads my stuff in Peterson's or any of the blogs or hears me on the podcast. I mean, I talk about executing shots, and animals die when you execute shots. But a lot of times there, again, like we've already talked about, we rush stalks, we rush shots, and bad things happen when you do that. And I remember sitting there, once again, I'm in the moment, and I look down at my bow, and I see where I wrote, you know, in big, bold, black letters on my riser, in Sharpie, you know, execute. And I'm just like, all right, you know, you need to just get back to full draw and this buck's going to die. Like, forget the angle, forget, you know, like I'm overthinking shit. I'm like, you need to get up, get back to full draw. After you get a range on this buck, set your slider and freaking let your bow do its job. Like, at this point, I'm sort of freaking out a little bit. Cause like, I'm right there. Like, I'm in it. I'm in the moment now. Like, it's now like this shit's, it's getting real, real quick. It's going to happen. You know, like at this point, I'm down there. It's going to happen, you know? And, so I range him and, you know, it's clicking like, you know, 88, 89, 90, but with the angle, it's telling me shoot him for 71 because it's so steep down. Yeah. So it's, you know, so it's cutting a ton of yardage off. Which I kind of figured was going to be anyway, because like I said, I mean, I'm shooting straight down and he's in his bed and the way he's bedded, he's wide open to me. So like he's bedded facing away, but his entire backside, he's like tucked up on his hooves. So like
his body's so exposed.
Exactly, dude. His entire backside of his body is completely exposed. So, I mean, I'm not a giant bedded shot fan, but in this scenario, his vitals and everything are sitting there wide open. Like nothing, like he's not rolled over on his side. He's right up on both sets of hooves. So everything's tucked up underneath him and he's literally like sitting up under his feet. So, I mean, it's a perfect shot as far as like wide open to his vitals. So click the yardage, get my pin set. And I can remember going back to full draw and I check my cam, my bottom cam. I've got like an inch and a half of clearance off of my knee. So I'm like, all right, you know, like that'll be okay. Like I'll be able to make that work. Like it's not as tight as I thought it was going to be. And I remember thinking in my head, like it was like the weirdest flashback I've ever had, because like, I don't know why, but it like flashed me back, like just like real quick to like different phases of different hunts the past 3 years and just being at full draw on bucks and not getting to release an arrow. And it's like when I got settled in, dude, I had like this little quick flashback moment and I looked at that execute on my riser one last time and I just remember settling that pin and thinking, this is it. Like right now, if you push and pull this bow apart and let this shot break on its own, this buck will die. Like this deer is dead. This is it. Like this is like it's going to fucking happen right now. And I remember pushing and pulling and dude, the shot broke. And it's like, it'll probably be the coolest shot, honestly, maybe that I ever make on an animal, because that arrow went in and buried behind the shoulder. It hit the rock that he was laying against. So it went through, hit the rock, bounced right back out. He stands up. Just, I mean, leaking, dude. He's got
like bounces back out of the cavity of the deer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like arrow goes through, goes to a point where it hits the rock and comes right back out. Almost looks like I shot him from the other side and the arrow come through.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. So he stands up. I can see my holes. He's just leaking. He takes two steps. The other four bucks stand up. They're looking at him. He takes two steps, dude, and literally just flops and barrel rolls like 300 yards down to the bottom of the basin. Shit. I mean, just fucking boom, 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 boom. Like, dude, I've never had, and I mean, I've been blessed to have killed a ton of shit in my day and have, you know, like hunted some of these whitetails for years before killing them and so much history with them and blah, blah, blah. Like, I've never had an animal or a shot like that to where I couldn't even control any bodily function at all. Like I just had like it's like the weirdest, like I guess you could call it like bow orgasm that I've ever had in my life.
Oh yeah, dude,
like,
all the adrenaline, I mean, and hard work.
Dude, just like, I mean, when I saw him flop over and start that barrel roll, I mean, he was dead on his feet when he stood up, and it was like, it's just a moment in time that, I mean, like I'll never probably be able to like top that until I watch like my boys start killing stuff.
Right,
I mean, that was like, I almost feel like in my career, that shot will probably maybe be like, just because I know how much went into that hunt and how long it took, like how long I waited for that to happen. That'll probably be a shot that I don't know if I'll ever could say that I like topped as far as just like what it meant to me when I saw that arrow hit its mark. I mean, it was just one of those. And I mean, honestly, like that hunt, like, yeah, there again, like, I mean, it's about the buck and it's about you want to punch your tag, but like, it was just so much that it went into, you know,
it was
like
a buildup.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I've been talking about this mule deer obsession for years. You know, people have been rooting in my corner or hating against my corner or whatever. You know what I mean? Like for years, people have heard me talk about this and it's like it, you know, it just come down to that moment and being able to be in that moment and execute a good shot and make it happen on a giant for my first mule deer buck. You know, it's one that'll probably be hard to ever really honestly top. And just the way it happened, like I was there and I remember just sitting down and laying my bow down and just taking it all in. Like I remember just like scanning around me being in the mountains up there that, you know, up in the high country in that rocky, nasty shit that I was in. But like everywhere you look is just like a picture. I mean, you could just take a picture of anywhere up there and you could throw it on a postcard. I mean, just beautiful, completely beautiful. And I remember just sitting there, you know, being in like freaking tears because I was just so happy. And it would have been super awesome to have like my dad or like have a buddy or have someone there. But at the same time, dude, like I wouldn't trade that it was just me. Like that's
a
moment.
That's a deeper experience in a way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it was. I mean, like that's a moment that honestly I had replayed in my head, like I said, 82 million times. And like, it was so surreal, man, that I was literally in that moment right then and there. Like, I mean, it's almost like it felt like it was never going to happen. And then it finally did. And it's like, it's just one of those moments in time that'll be like etched in your brain forever of like, it was just me and a buck and my bow and a Colorado landscape. Like, that's it. I mean, that there was nobody else around, nothing else. I mean, that's it. Like, the only people involved were like me. That was it. So, I mean, it was just like a super cool moment to be there solo and just know that I got it done by myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, dude, that's insane. That's insane. Especially the way it went down. And then like, so I know people are asking this, like when the buck are, people are wondering this while they're listening. When that buck rolls down the hill, are you worried about, cause he's in velvet, right?
Oh yeah. He's in full velvet. So my first thought is, you know, right away it's like, fuck yes, I freaking smoked him, he's dead. And then I'm like, no, velvet, shit. Like, you know, like I'm like, no.
Holy shit, I can't even imagine.
So I'm looking at him through my binos and I'm like, he's all freaking tucked up.
I gotta say one thing quick. I have to pee because I've been drinking beer and it's late. So I want you to entertain the people with some advice while I go pee until I get back, and then I want to continue the story from after the buck falls. And we've never done something like this on the show, but I gotta go pee.
Now, I understand, but pee breaks happen.
Give the people what they need in positive vibes until I get back. I'll go fast.
True that. True that. So while Kurt's gonna go take his pee break, if I'm going to break down this hunt into why everybody should go do this hunt, whether it's mule deer, elk, why people should try a solo hunt, why people should go out and experience this for themselves, by themselves. Honestly, for me, mentally and physically, if you want to try to test yourself or see where you're at mentally and physically, this is it. You go solo, you go by yourself. I mean, like I said earlier, you're trying to live out there. Number one, just survive. I mean, just surviving out there by yourself, you're accomplishing something that a lot of people won't. Huge accomplishment, gives you confidence. You know, it's a hunt that it's not just about punching tags whenever you do a solo hunt. I mean, it's honestly about the experience, and I think you'll gain a better we'll say, understanding for how deeply rooted you are in bow hunting by going on a solo hunt. So, you know, for me, that's why I love it. That's why I do it.
Great
advice.
I think a lot of people
will honestly find themselves thinking that same thing that I think. But there are some people that hate it. I mean, I've had guys message me like, dude, we went on a solo hunt. It's awesome. It's awesome that you do it, but I was scared to death. I'm not going to lie. I fucking hated it. I didn't like it. I want to hunt with friends. And honestly, man, I get that. Like,
that's the majority of a lot of it, though, too, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's not for everybody. Like, it is not for everybody, man. I mean, it really isn't. But I do think guys will appreciate and respect the fact that others do it, even if they don't like it. It's a whole nother type of experience that you can put under your hat and say, yep, I've done a solo bow hunt. I can understand why guys do it, whether you like it or you don't. It's just something that you've almost got to experience for yourself.
That's cool. You got me thinking about one, but if my dad's hunting, I got to take my dad with, you know.
Yeah. Like oh, thing, yeah. But. No, dude. Yeah, man.
All right, sure. I'm back from the pee break. We've never done something. Well, maybe we have done something like that, but not like on a one-on-one podcast.
Yep.
So your buck rolls down a hill. He's in full velvet. You're kind of like, fuck velvet.
Yep. So I'm looking at him through my binos, and he's all wrapped up. His back legs are tucked up in his rack. I mean, he's a freaking mess down there. So I'm like nervous about the rack, the velvet. Like, so this is kind of where this part from here on out in this story is kind of where I'm going to say people need to learn from my mistakes, because I'll be honest. I mean, I fucked up from this point on, and it could have cost me like potentially my freaking life later on. Whenever we get into the pack out, but so I'm pumped up. I'm cliffed out. I cannot get down to my buck without going back up the chute that I just came up. So my plan was go back up, get my pack, go out around the basin, drop down in, and then I can walk across the basin to get to my buck. At this point in time, it's about 2 o'clock. I'm jacked. I'm pumped. I got a little bit of service. Call my dad. Texted a few people, you know, buck down, you know, off of my Garmin inReach. I was able to get a hold of my dad real quick. He's always the first call I make. So, you know, like it was super cool to be able to like get a little bit of service up on the top of that spine. And as soon as he saw me call, it's almost like he knew middle of the day I shouldn't be calling. So he was chopping corn and he answers, and I could hear him shut the, chopper off, and he's like, buck down. And I just remember like, you know, being like, fuck yeah. You know, I watched him die. You know, it was just like a super cool moment. Cause it's almost like he knew if I'm calling at that time of the day, like something must have happened,
right,
you know? So where I screwed up was when I got back to my pack, I'm in broad daylight. I should have marked where that pack was, and I should have marked on my Onyx the route that I was going to take to go down this rock cliff to get down into this basin. Here real soon, you'll understand why. So anyways, I dive down off through the rocks. I make it down there. I get into the basin. I get to my buck. I'm fucking jacked. I'm pumped. I mean, the velvet's ripped a little bit, but nothing's broke. I get him all propped up. I'm taking pictures. I mean, I'm just trying to enjoy like as much of this as I can. Like I want to get pictures taken. I want to get him freaking quartered up, cut up. And now's when the work begins. I mean, so you've got this buck killed. You're in the middle of the backcountry. I'm like 8 miles from my camp. I got to get him quartered out. I got to get him, you got to get the meat in game bags. I got to get him caped out. I got to get everything packed up into my pack. So now I'm going to have like a 120-pound pack, and I got to get all this shit back to camp. So I start getting, I get pictures taken first, and I get him caped out. I get him cut up. I get, you know, I get all this stuff done. It's about 5 o'clock, maybe 5:30. In my head, I'm thinking, okay, I can wrap out around this basin and I can get to the other side and I can slowly start to climb my way up and basically side hill up to the top of this spine. On Onyx, it looked good. In my head, it looked good. I knew the other three of the four sides of this basin were cliffed out, totally cliffed out. And when I say cliffed out, I mean, for people that have never been out west, if you're cliffed out, basically you get to a point where the drop off is so steep and rocky that there's no humanly way possible you can get up or get down. So when I say cliffed out on three of the four sides of this basin, three of the four sides, there's no way you're entering or leaving that basin where that buck died.
Yeah, it's a cliff. Literally a cliff.
Yep, totally cliffed out. So I get to the end. It's about 6:30 now, and I realize that I'm like, oh, shit, like this is steeper than what I thought. And I'm looking at it, and I'm really, like, scanning it with my binoculars, and I'm just like, there's all this loose scree. All this loose shale, and I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, Clint, I don't know, dude, like, without ropes and shit, like, I don't think you can cross that. So now, panic set in a little bit, because it's like 6:37, I mean, I got an hour and a half till dark. My plan was to be up on that spine and, like, basically get the steepest part of this whole journey up out of there in daylight. Now, I'm going to have to basically backtrack. And the way I come down that I should have marked is how I need to go back up. Well, I didn't mark that. So now I'm at a point of, I'm like, all right, I got to get back to that spot before dark, try to find how I come down and then navigate my way back up in the dark. So now I'm sort of, yeah, so I'm getting a little nervous. To make matters worse, I'm looking on my InReach and there's a big ass storm going to blow in later on that night. So now I'm kind of in a way like a panicking a little because I'm still 7.5-8 miles from camp. So, I mean, I've still got a solid 4 or 5 hour hike to get back to, you know, back to my tent, which is like my safe zone of like, that's the only safety I've got, you know, before the lightning and hail and all this shit hits.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find the spot. It's starting to get dark. I'm trying to find this spot that I went up. I think I found it, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm pretty sure it's how I come down through these, through the rocks and stuff. I start up and I just get to a point where I'm like, this pack is too heavy. Like, I'm not physically going to be able to get up out of here as steep as this is. So I, in my head, I'm like, all right, what are you going to do here? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to drop my buck and drop my bow. I'm going to tuck him in the shadows underneath some of this, like basically tuck them up underneath some of these rock ledges. That's going to drop like 40, 50 pounds off my total pack weight. And I'm not having to carry my bow so I can use both hands. And I'm like, okay, basically I'm going to take the meat out, leave the bow, leave the buck. I'm going to have to come back and get it the next day. Like it's just too much weight. It's too steep. I mean, at this point in time, I left at 4 in the morning, at 6 at night. I'm going on 14 hours. I'm just fucking whooped at this point. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to drop this shit. I got to get up out of here. Like it's getting dark. I need to get going. I know this storm's blowing in. I can feel the wind coming out of the north. Like, you know, everything's telling me like this storm's going to blow in quicker, you know, sooner than later. Like you got to get going. So I turn my headlamp on. I start up through and I'm just like, man, I just don't remember some of this shit. I'm trying to talk myself into like, oh no, this is the right route. This is it. Like, and when you're in these rocks, basically like you're going, it was probably like 1,400-1,500 vertical feet up, but it's all rock. So you're navigating game trails. You're navigating, you know, you're basically navigating off of what animals use to get up and through this to get to the top. Once I get to the top of that spine, I can run that ridge damn near clear all the way back to where my camp is right off the other side, but it's just getting to that point. So it's about 9 o'clock and I'm only halfway up. It's taken me a long time. I mean, all I've got's my, you know, my little headlamp. I'm using both hands, both feet. I get to a point where I'm just super exhausted. And I'm like, man, like I got to take a little break. Like I've got to sit down, like I got to find a spot that I can honestly rest my legs. Like I'm just getting, I'm almost to the point of like exhaustion to where, you know, like I've got food and I've got a little bit of water and I thought about, even just trying to crawl up in the rocks and ride the storm out, but I'm just afraid about getting wet and it being so cold at night.
Oh yeah, you'd be hosed if that happened.
Yeah, I'm just not sure if I've got enough gear there to where if I got wet, I would be okay, to make it through the night basically till morning. So now at this point, I'm just like, all right, that's out of the question. Like, you've got to get up out here. So I get to this point where I've got to cross this big rock scree. So basically, like, when rocks fall and you get like avalanche chutes, it leaves a bunch of like small little sharp jagged rocks that are left behind. That shit's really hard to cross. Number one, it's usually really steep, and number two, it's really unstable. So you've got to like inch your way across, and I mean, it's really hard to keep your footing. I probably honestly shouldn't even have tried it. And looking back, I should have just taken a different route and just said, screw it. But I thought I could run this game trail across. I got partway across, lost my footing, and I slid about 40 feet. So I landed on my ass. And when you fall on that scree, it's almost like if you were on a snowbank that a bunch of people have already like took sleds down. And if you were to slide down on that, like, there's really no way to stop yourself because it's already, right, like, packed in.
Yeah.
So I slid about 40 foot. I caught myself with my right ankle on part of a rock ledge. It stopped me, but I sprained the shit out of my ankle. I knew the minute I hit it from playing sports my whole life, I knew what I did.
Damn it,
man. Oh, yeah.
I can't even imagine. So is it getting dark at this point, or like where?
Oh, it's like 9:30. Oh, it's dark. Yeah,
oh,
it's
dark.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm at the point where my headlamp is the only thing that is like light. You know what I mean? So,
Fuck. So
I gather myself up. I ripped my thumbnail off. My ankles tore up pretty good. The entire ass end of my Sitka Apex pants, my core midweight bottom layers, and my Sitka boxers, literally right now, my right ass cheek is hanging out. I mean, it just, that scree is so sharp. It literally ripped about a six inch long by 5 inch wide gash completely through all three of those layers of Sitka and freaking bruised the shit out of my, I mean, like, I knew whenever I did it, I'm just like, this is bad. As I'm sliding, I'm like, this is not going to end well. Like, this is bad. So I'm looking for something to grab. And the only thing I could do was put my foot out to like brace myself, to stop myself. And so I jammed that right ankle. So playing sports my whole life, I know the best thing I can do now is hurry the hell up, get out of there, because I know that ankle is going to start to swell really bad if I don't like keep pressure on it basically. So right. I gather myself up and I start back up. I get about another, I don't know, I'm probably 100 yards from where I took the spill, and I made another vital mistake. I took a little bit of a break. I'm just like, dude, I need to gather my marbles. I need to fucking just like reevaluate what's going on right now. I took about a 10-minute break, and I shouldn't have done this because my ankle stiffened up. It started to swell. I felt it in my boot. I mean, I needed to take a break mentally, like to just like, just freaking regain myself. But like, I shouldn't have actually stopped moving.
You kind of like let your muscles and everything get cold and stiff.
Yep. So at this point now I'm kind of like in panic mode. Like, I've got to make a decision. Like, I'm like, okay, you got two kids at home. Like, physically, can you get out of here? Like, I mean, at this point in time, I'm having like a come to justice with Jesus moment. Like, I'm like, all right, like, this is real talk, Clint. Like, can you physically get your ass out of here now? Or are you going to have to ride it out tonight and figure something else out? Like, are you going to be able to do it or not? Because I knew the last 150 yards was the steepest, and I knew I was going to have to really like basically freehand rock climb my way out of there. And it was kind of one of the moments where, I mean, that part of the hunt, like, I had to really make a judgment call on, like, I guess basically, physically and mentally, where are you at right now? Like, are you going to be able to do this? And honestly, like, I took myself to a level that sports has never taken me to. I mean, I honestly went into fight or flight and I got kind of pissed and I was kind of mentally like in the state of, you're not dying on this fucking mountain. You just killed your buck. You just worked 4 years to get to this point. You're in a really bad spot right now. You got a bummed up ankle. You got your whole ass cheek hanging out. Like, this is bad, but you got to figure out a way to get the hell out of here. Like, you have to get out of here. And looking back, I mean, like, it's surreal to the point of like where it was like real danger that I was in. But like, there again, though, I put myself in a scenario I've never been in. I mean, sports have never put me in a physically demanding spot like that. Life has never put me in a physically demanding or mentally demanding spot like that. So for the first time in my life, I was in a very uncomfortable situation and fight or flight took over and I decided to fight. And 30, 40 minutes later, I finally got my ass up out of there. But, I'll be honest. I mean, I was scared. I mean, like, there's not many things that I can say I'm honestly, like, scared of or many times where I've been scared. Like, I was scared going up out of there. And looking back, not marking my route, just kind of letting emotions take over and not thinking the whole thought process out clearly as far as having a game plan of, okay, what if you can't get out of this basin? What's your backup plan to get out of here?
Right.
Honestly, dude, like as steep and bad as that spot is, I mean, I could have easily made a wrong move up there, dude, and fell fucking 800 foot and been a pile of mush.
Well, yeah, especially in the dark, with a bum ankle, you could lose your footing and fall off and shit's crazy. Man, that is something that a lot of people don't think about. Like that type of fear is different, you know? It's,
because there's nobody. I mean, there again, dude. There's no cell service. I mean, I had my in reach and I mean, at one point in time, I'm like, okay, is this bad enough to where you need to press this button?
Like, is this justified? Am I going to look like a puss if they come in? They're like, dude, you're fine. No, I hear you. Like sometimes like that, the thought that you considered that proved that you were in a pretty rough situation. Cause I feel like it would take a lot for most people to hit that button. Man, that's crazy.
Yep. And so I got up there and now it's like, you know, 10:30 storms. I mean, winds blowing, hail. I mean, storms blowing in. I'm still like 6 miles from camp and I'm just like, okay, like no more breaks. Like you've got to get your ass in gear. You have to get back to camp. Like the storm's blowing in. You're running this ridge line. The whole time I'm just thinking, if I see one thing of lightning, I'm going to have to drop down over the edge, get down in the timber, wrap the timber around. Like, so, you know, thank God, I was able to pretty much run the entire way back to camp fairly easily. I mean, it still took me, I got back to camp. It was like 2:15, 2:30 in the morning. So, I mean, it was, you know, I started the day at 5 a.m. on the 6th and got back to camp at like 2 a.m. on the 7th. So it was an all day, you know, I mean, it was damn near a 24-hour deal, me out there.
That's insane. Well, hey, worth it though, because one, you got the mule deer of your dreams. You accomplished the whole backcountry solo thing. It gives you podcast content and writing content for a long time and many different perspectives. Like, you know, you could talk about this hunt like we did a lot on this show is, you know, you could just talk about the mental ability on that alone and do several articles and several podcasts on that alone, let alone like adding the hunt story in and the pack out story.
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the thing was, is once I got back to camp, I was relieved, but my next, like, I kind of forgot my buck and my bow are still down in the bottom of that basin. So now I'm laying in my tent. It's 2:30 in the morning and I'm like, how are you going to get the meat to the truck tomorrow? how are you going to get back to your buck and your bow? Like, that was my next, like, oh, shit. Like, how are you going to do this on a bum ankle?
Right, right.
So, like, that was, like, you know, the whole next freaking, like, phase of this hunt. I mean, you know, it was adventure from, you know, start to finish. Like, I knew in my head I wasn't just going to go out there, kill a mule deer, come back, and it just go smooth like that. Like, that just wasn't how it was going to happen. Like, I knew it was going to be turmoil at some point.
I guess if you're going to have turmoil, though, it's better after you drop a giant muley in the backcountry with your bow. Like, anything that happens after that is, like, that's just part of it, and you're okay, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And it's funny how it worked out, because, like, the next day I hobbled my ass back to my truck with the meat, got it out. I went back to town. I got a hotel that night, like, iced my ankle, and I went down to this local saloon, and I'm just, like, talking to some of the locals, and I'm like, hey, listen, I'm like, I need to find someone that wants to make a couple $100. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I shot this buck. I'm like 12 miles back. I'm physically probably not going to be able to go down and literally get my cape and my bow. Like, I can get someone to the point of the top of that spine, but, like, I'm going to need somebody. Like, I rolled this ankle good enough to where I'm physically not going to be able to get down there. And as luck would have it, I run into this old guy that's like, dude, I got a buddy that's a firefighter. His name's Kyle. And he's like a semi-professional rock climber. Like, he would be all in to probably come help you. Gives me this dude's number. I call this dude. He's in his early 30s. He actually has an elk tag for the unit that I'm in hunting mule deer.
No shit.
He just got into hunting. Super cool dude. I call him. I tell him the scenario. He's like, where are you at? I tell him where I'm at. He's like, why the fuck would you kill a mule deer back there? And I'm like, what are you? I'm like, what? I'm like, dude, what do you mean? He's like, where your buck is at? He's like, we climb that with ropes and shit. He's like, how did you get out of there? And I'm like, well, I climbed. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, I freehand climbed it. And he's like, dude, me and my buddies, like, we don't freehand climb that. And we, like, rock climb for fun. Like, that's what we do. Like these dudes climb, like, you know, like, guys go rope off Everest and shit and do that kind of crazy. Like, that's what these cats do.
And you're like, dude, this is why I'm calling you.
Yeah. And I'm like, and he's just like, he's like, dude, he's like, I don't know how you got out of there without, like, ropes and stuff. So I tell him where the buck's at, and, like, we go in. Like, I hobble my ass back in with him the next day. We start at 6 in the morning. We go in. We go down and get my buck and my bow. We get back to the truck that night at, like, 8 o'clock. It's, like, a 22-mile round-trip deal. And, like, it's just so cool because, like, dude, like, he's a friend forever now. Like, we text. We talk. Like I got to share, like, another part of, like, my experience, like, with a guy I never met that now we're, like, good friends. We bullshit all the time. He went in there, actually, and I told him a bunch of spots. I was seeing elk. He went in there. He's been elk hunting in there. Been super close. Just got into hunting. So, like, super, super fresh on everything. And, it's been super
cool.
But,
man.
It is. It was, like, and it's, like, I'll be honest. I'm bullheaded. I did not want to ask anybody for help, but my ankle was tore up to the point where I'm just like, Clint, you've got your bow and a lifetime buck in there. Like, when you go in, you need to make sure you can get it out. And I was at the point, I had an elk tag. So I was off 3 weeks of work. I was supposed to shoot this buck, get it taken care of, get it to the taxidermist in town, and go right back and start elk hunting. I didn't even get to hunt 1 hour on my elk tag. Because literally, I jacked this ankle up so bad that, I mean, honestly, like, it was hard for me to even drive home, let alone go elk hunt.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. Well,
dude, you did it, man. It's nuts. The story's insane. I would say it's what dreams are made of, except for the whole, like, getting stuck part. Like, but that just adds, like, that type of suck makes the story so much better. Because if you would have just went in and killed it and then it was done, you'd be like, I don't have much to say. you know?
Oh, for sure. And I mean, it's always an adventure. And like I said, I mean, being in that moment, like the fight or flight, like, I mean, it honestly put me mentally and physically in a place I've never been in. And I honestly now know I'm capable mentally and physically of more than I even thought I was. And I mean, like I said, I'm my biggest critic. I am my biggest pusher. Like, I push myself to the limits on everything I do. And honestly, I've never pushed myself even close to how I had to push myself that night to get out of there. So, I mean, it's cool just to know that physically and mentally, if I have to go to those depths, I can do it. Like, but in the moment, oh, I ain't gonna lie, dude. I mean, I'd tell it to anybody. I was scared shitless because I'm just you fall here, Clint. That's it, man. Like, it's like you fall 800 foot on rock.
You're done.
It's, oh, dude, you are a pile of vanilla pudding at the bottom of the mountain.
Oh, man, dude, that's so nuts. I'm glad you got one, man. I'm excited to see the thing. I got to see the thing in person because it looks just absolutely nuts.
He was, I mean, and everyone's asked me, but I know there's going to be people that's going to ask, you know, you or me or whatever. He was 30, because in the mule deer world, width is everything. I mean, that's what they're known for. He was 32 inches on the dot.
Holy shit. Yeah, that is 30, nuts. 32 inches wide?
32 on the dot, yep.
Holy smokes, dude, that's nuts. That's like unfathomable for like a whitetail, you know?
Oh, yeah, because I mean, like, we're used to 20, 21's pretty wide.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, 20 inside's good. Like, you're.
Yep.
You know, oh, he was 20 at least, you know, you always hear that.
Yep, for sure.
Dude, yep. That's awesome, man. Congratulations. That sounds like such an adventure.
Definitely an adventure, and it's, like I said, it's one of those hunts that, you know, you think about, and then once you're in it, it's fun to be able to, like, soak it all in and just experience it all. And I mean, you know, I know you just got back from Oregon and got to shoot your first muley. And I mean, like, I you know, we've talked about these hunts a lot. You know, me and you are always bouncing ideas and talking to one another about stuff. And it's fun to have heard you talk about your hunt, because I can remember my first couple mule deer hunts, like, and I didn't kill anything, but just the experience and just like what it brought to me experience wise, mentally and physically. And then like to hear you talk about your experience. Like I told you, man, it'll ruin a guy. I mean, it really will.
It's,
I mean,
weird chasing him around and then coming back to a tree stand. Like, you still love your tree stand, but you're kind of like, man, running around, actively finding them, like why they're about, and then moving in on them is addicting.
Yep.
So I think it's in some guys' blood, like when they experience it, they're like, I need more, and some guys just don't care, and that's cool too. So I like all types of hunting when it comes to bow hunting or big game or whatever. It's, you know, I don't really dabble in waterfowl or upland game or anything like that, but that type of hunting, the Western game with a bow or even rifle, and then the Midwestern bow hunting, like, that's just where it's at, in my opinion. That's, I don't know if it gets any better.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, and I mean, and just, you know, I mean, just to be able to experience all the different, you know, like, facets that come with each style of hunting, you know, whether it's blinds and stands, or whether it's, you know, I mean, and it's just the mental, you know, the differences in the mental and physical part of each style too is,
yeah,
I mean, it's fun. It's,
for sure.
And like right now, dude, I mean, right now is like the rut's kicking off. I mean, like right now, if you're a Midwest guy and you're a tree stand whitetail guy, like, this is it, you know, like, you live for this moment. So it's cool to be able to like experience both and be able to do both. You know, like, we're blessed to be able to hunt out West plus hunt Midwest and get to experience all that, in the same season. I mean,
which is crazy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the next, I think this weekend's going to be crazy. Next couple weekends are going to be good. So it's going to get crazy. Clint, thank you for coming on late night and telling this crazy story. I imagine we're going to touch base here hopefully in a few weeks, and we can talk whitetails and catch up on some. Hopefully we all have whitetails down by then.
I know. Hopefully I'm going to start all day sits Saturday. I'm going to kick off the first one of the year. So yeah, man, it would be it'd be awesome to freaking a couple of us knock some down this weekend, man. I think this weekend with that red moon, I think it's gonna be freaking dynamite here the next couple days. I really do.
Yep, I feel good about it. I'm gonna sit in the morning, get down late morning, do a hang and bang, and probably tuck in for the rest of the day after that. So
hell yeah, man, no doubt.
That's my plan. All right, dude, you got anything else you want to add on this one before we split off?
Man, just anybody that's on the fence about doing it, just jump in and do it, man. Whether it's a Western hunt with buddies or a solo hunt, a mule deer hunt, an elk hunt. I mean, for guys that haven't experienced Western hunting in some way, shape, or form, you can ask me, ask Kurt. It's life-changing. It really is. I mean, it is a I don't know anyone that's ever went out and done it and was like, ooh, no, never going to do that again. That was no fun.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Not going to do that again. Like,
it's rare.
It is, man. It is. It's a game changer, and it's definitely, it'll make you, I honestly feel like it's made me, a better bow hunter and a better person by doing the, especially like the solo hunts, man.
Yep.
I really do.
Yep. Hell yeah, dude. Well, I appreciate you coming on again, man. As always, appreciate the friendship and, congratulations on that stud muley, dude. I'm glad you got it done.
Hey, man, appreciate it, and congrats on your buck in Oregon, dude. I'm sure it felt freaking awesome to go on a muley hunt and be able to punch a tag in the fourth quarter like you did.
Oh, yeah, dude, it was awesome, man. It was a good year so far, and so we just need to polish her off with some whitetails. That's all we got.
No doubt, no doubt.
All right, dude. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. Good luck out there in the woods. Send us those kill photos, especially if you have some working class bow hunter gear on. If not, workingclassbowhunter.com and pick up some stuff. Shameless plug. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.